I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE. 37 years ago today, the late Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat declared the creation of the state of Palestine based on the 1967 borders before Israel illegally occupied the Sinai Peninsula, the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, and the Golan Heights. Since that 1988 declaration, Palestine has been far from independent, as Gaza, the West Bank, and East Jerusalem have remained under Israeli occupation. The Gaza Strip, where 2.2 million Palestinians call home, has been under siege and obliterated by US, UK, EU-armed Israeli weapons. At least 69,000 Palestinians have been killed in that time, over 170,000 have been wounded, and over half a million are living in famine, according to the UN. In the week that Netanyahu lost his strategic affairs minister, I'm joined by Netanyahu's former advisor. Ruthie Blum is senior contributing editor at Jewish News Syndicate and co-host of one of its podcasts, Israel Undiplomatic. She's also the author of the book, To Hell in a Handbasket, Carter, Obama, and the Arab Spring. And she joins me now from Tel Aviv. Ruthie, thanks so much for coming on. It's been quite a week in so many different geopolitical dimensions. Let's just kick off with how you personally, and perhaps your co-hosts of Israel Undiplomatic, viewed the fact that the former commander of Al-Qaeda in Syria was in the Oval Office with Trump this week, and Trump was spraying perfume over him.
Oh, well, yes. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. And I would like to just add something that you to what you said about this has been a very busy week. But I would say that it's been a very busy 2 years and even farther back than that. Events are happening at such a pace that it's impossible to keep up. I'll tell you, Ashara, or whom most Israelis still call Al-Julani, because that was his nom de guerre, actually, it's not only that he was a commander of Al-Qaeda, he was also ISIS. He switched back and forth because of infighting between the jihadists over there. Now, Trump has said about him, listen, he had a rough past, but, you know, we all have a rough past. And I would like to say that, no, I don't have a rough past of a mass murder. But the question is, can Ashara change? Has he changed his spots? Has he put on a suit and tie and decided not to be a terrorist anymore? Well, obviously, we all hope so. You know, the Syrian regime, the Assad regime, was a bloodthirsty regime. We're hoping. I'm very skeptical, I say, as we know, the proof is in the pudding. We also see that he says...
There's still a $10 million bounty on his head on the U.S. State Department tweet.
Yes.
Why should, I don't know what you think the Israeli cabinet right now, the President Netanyahu cabinet, think of this, because it seems odd to say, let's give him a benefit of any kind of doubt, given his background. I mean, he should be in prison, shouldn't he?
I couldn't agree with you more, which is surprising, I suppose, that you and I agree so wholeheartedly on certain topics. Here's the thing, though. The Netanyahu government, but let's say specifically Prime Minister Netanyahu himself, has been doing an incredibly delicate balancing act. He went from the more hostile Biden administration to an extremely friendly towards Israel Trump administration. And the last thing in the world that Netanyahu would want to do is antagonize Trump in any way. So I believe that what he's doing is behind the scenes. Now, you mentioned Ron Dermer, his strategic affairs minister, who just submitted his resignation letter. We knew that was coming because for the last couple of months, he announced that he would be leaving.
That shocked you, presumably, right? Because you often mention him. Did that shock you? Because you've often mentioned him as a person who was key in the Witkoff and J.D. Vance negotiations over the so-called ceasefire.
Well, it didn't really shock me, and I'll tell you why, but that's more on a personal level. I know his family. I know that before the war broke out, when Netanyahu got elected at the end of 2022, then formed his government in December 2022, I know that he summoned Ron Dermer, and that Dermer said, yes, I'm coming back, but I'll give you a couple of years. But then because the war broke out in October, October 2023, Dermer stayed on longer than he had originally intended because it was an emergency situation. So I think that that played a big role. So I wasn't really surprised.
But two things come to mind there, because were there pictures of Netanyahu on the Golan Heights treating ISIS al-Qaeda there during the middle of the Syrian civil war? So that's why you'd think that Israel, and specifically Netanyahu, would have a more mixed attitude towards Jilani. In fact, across the Middle East, clearly ISIS and al-Qaeda are seen as proxies of Israel.
Absolutely, and I have no doubt that Netanyahu and Dermer, behind the scenes, have been discussing this with the Trump administration. I have no question. Listen, but it's not only al-Jilani. It's also, if you know, Qatar and Egypt, there's a very delicate situation going on here that Qatar was mediating the hostage releases and ceasefires when it also was housing Hamas. You know, this whole thing, you could say the whole thing was crazy, but President Trump has this idea in mind that he is going to make peace in the Middle East. Now,
yeah, but before we get to Trump, I mean, what you mean by crazy? And I should say, you know, the bounty was lifted. You don't get $10 million if you seize Jilani in the streets of Washington D.C. this week. The whole thing is crazy because Netanyahu has been spotted at an Israeli hospital with the ISIS fighters. Obviously, they were trying to overthrow the government of Assad. And simultaneously, Ron Dermer, to remind our audience, who's a former ambassador to Washington, Israeli ambassador to Washington, very controversial one. Is it crazy more because just as they're now supporting al-Qaeda publicly now, it's a bit redolent of how Israel supported Hamas and created Hamas?
Well, you know, it's not exactly that Israel supported Hamas. There was a tricky situation here between the Palestinian Authority led by Fatah and Hamas that took over Gaza and those two rival factions. And you are right that there was what we call in Israel the conceptia, which is like concept, but not quite. It's more like this philosophy of the best way to deal with enemies on different fronts. And we saw on October 7th that it totally backfired and failed. Now, some of us, myself included, never bought into that, no matter who was in power in Israel.
Sorry to interrupt. But this, I mean, you know, as everyone says, you know, it was a tragedy, October 7th, the details of which we might be able to go into further. But I mean, you know, it doesn't take a genius to see that funding Hamas from the point of view of Israeli existence is not a great idea, does it? I mean, it's a
terrible idea. But let me tell you, if I have to, defend the opposite position, okay? The idea behind it, I never supported this idea, but I'll defend the idea just for argument's sake. The idea behind it was that in Gaza, you have a pressure cooker of people who need work. They need work permits in Israel. And that if they're too impoverished, then they will commit acts of terrorism, which they were doing anyway, which is why Israel withdrew in 2005 from the Gaza Strip. But the idea was we allow Qatar to bring in money to Hamas, so that to Gaza, to Hamas and the Gazans, so to keep, let's say, to keep a lid on terrorism. Now, this is a ridiculous assumption because, first of all, we know that the largest, most evil terrorists in the world have been quite wealthy and educated. So that's a ridiculous assumption. And we saw that, listen, if you are a religious ideologue, it's not enough to have a good job and, you know, have a paycheck and that'll keep you from, it'll make you abandon your religious ideology.
I'm not sure it's quite all religious. The PFLP isn't that religious. But as you say, I think our audience gets the point of view, that gets the idea that it's idiotic. But having said that, Ron Dermer, who was part of this Witkoff process with Jared Kushner, I mean, he was previously in hot water for saying that since the Jewish state is legitimate, it requires a Jewish majority. So using economics, they can reduce the reproductivity of Palestinians. He was on the record as backing this kind of idea because he didn't, because the important thing was to keep a majority Jewish population for the survival of Israel. Has he talked to you about that?
No, wait a minute. I think that you're mixing up two things. First of all, there's a difference between Gaza and the Palestinian Authority.
He said that generally in 2013 in Haaretz.
Now, I don't remember that specifically, but I will tell you what I do know about the discussions on demography. The Israeli left, interestingly, it came from the left that said, you know, we cannot have both a Jewish state and a democratic state if we don't have a Jewish majority. And therefore, we need a two-state solution. We need to separate from the Palestinians. Okay, that was the two-state solution view, that we need a Jewish majority and a democratic state. So the only way to do that is not to rule over a whole population, a larger population of Palestinians. And therefore, what we need to do is negotiate a two-state solution. They'll have their state. We'll have our state alongside. But it was tried again and again and again, and it didn't work. Now, I didn't read that quote by Ron Dermer, but what I can assume is that that's not what he meant, that we have to make sure they don't have a lot of children. The idea it was, and this I know from other pundits, etc., that the argument that demography was going to prevent Israel from having a Jewish majority, and therefore we had to have a Palestinian state, there were demographers who said this is false, because as Palestinian women, as all women in the world, get more educated and have computers and all that, they have fewer children. This isn't only true of Palestinians. This is true of most women in the world, especially the women who have 12 and 13 children. And that naturally, that the demographics are not necessarily working that way. So I don't know exactly what Ron Dermer said, but I can tell you one thing. There's no way that what he meant was you have to forcibly reduce, childbirth in another population.
Ruthie Blum, I'll stop you there. More from the former advisor to Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with former advisor to Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, Ruthie Blum. Ruthie, recently you've been criticizing Vice President J.D. Vance vociferously for his boat siding of the issue, which I think most of the world sees as a both sides issue, if not a Gaza genocide. And you also claim that he was mentored by Tucker Carlson. I think he'd probably deny that. Both of them would deny that. Why have you been criticizing J.D. Vance?
Okay, so my main criticism of J.D. Vance is the following. Recently, Tucker Carlson, who was very friendly with the Trump family and with J.D. Vance, there's been quite a distancing between all of them recently. But what J.D. Vance seems to believe is that if he doesn't appease the Tucker Carlson group, and I'll go into that bit more in a minute, that he will lose the election. In other words, that it is such the extreme far right in the Republican Party in America is strengthening, and therefore you don't want to lose them electorally, and so you don't want to antagonize them. And recently Tucker has been saying really abominable things. Tucker interviewed on his show Nick Fuentes, a neo-Nazi, openly neo-Nazi who hates Jews, who hates Muslims, who hates people of color. And Nick Fuentes, and when J.D. Vance was asked about this, what do you think about this and how terrible it is, he was very mild in his answer to students who asked him about it. And furthermore, I was very upset when, you see, Nick Fuentes has been going
In fairness, I've got to tell you, we interview some people that are pretty pretty strange on this show. So I think Tucker Carlson's first defense would be to say he's interviewed horrific people and it doesn't really matter the fact there has been an interview in any case. But isn't the point about this really the base for Donald Trump? And the base for Donald Trump was built by Charlie Kirk, who was assassinated. And we now know that in texts that Charlie Kirk said before he died, I have no choice but to leave the pro-Israel cause. You said on your show that you were shocked by the assassination, I believe. But what did you make of these messages?
First of all, I was devastated.
What do you make of him saying, just lost another huge Jewish donor, $2 million a year because he won't cancel Tucker Carlson. Jewish donors play into all the stereotypes. And now we have from Megyn Kelly video evidence of Charlie Kirk saying to Tucker Carlson, you go, Max, against Israel, in effect, because the whole of the base from which Trump draws his power despises Israel after the genocide.
But you see, what's interesting is I've got to tell you, that Charlie Kirk discussion was, I'm not quite sure what in the end happened because there was a lot of misrepresentation on both sides. I can tell you that, yes, I very much supported Charlie Kirk. I thought what he did, I liked the way he engaged students on campuses. I thought it was very fair. He let them talk, etc. I liked the way it went. I have no problem with people criticizing Israel. There is a line crossed, however, when the talk about supporting Israel is, you know, that Israel controls, the Israel lobby controls America, and Israel controls the banks, and Israel this, and Israel that. Now,
but he says he was being threatened by the Israel lobby, and Israel financing directly. And the person you used to work for, Benjamin Netanyahu, I mean, would you advise him to have tweeted out that he had nothing to do with the killing of Charlie Kirk, which seemed the most bizarre ex-performance for a while?
Well, because he was being accused of having... Candace Owens came right out and said that Israel was involved.
No, he didn't. Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens very quick to say, we are not saying that there is evidence to show the Israeli state did this. They had to keep saying that. But it's clear that Charlie Kirk said, just lost another huge Jewish donor, no choice but to leave the Israel cause. And it's no doubt that most Americans do not like Israel today, 60%. According to the Quinnipiac poll.
Look, I think that's very upsetting, but I will say that I don't believe that President Trump is among that 60%, if that figure is true. Okay, I'm not so sure, but let's say you're right. Okay, I have trouble a lot of time with statistics, but let's say you're right, because it comes from the left and the right. What I was trying to say about J.D. Vance is there are two choices here. Either J.D. Vance is afraid to confront that part of the Republican Party because he doesn't want to lose their support when he becomes, when it's time to campaign for his own presidency. Or he actually believes what they say. I do not believe at this moment. See, President Trump has said repeatedly, hey, I'm MAGA. I know what MAGA is. You know, there's a split in MAGA between people who are more isolationist, not only anti-Israel. Some of them aren't anti-Israel. They just don't believe in American, in America intervening in foreign policy. But here you go. President Trump seems to not be in that camp. How do we know that? Not only about Israel. President Trump is trying to solve crises all over the world.
He might have invaded Venezuela by now. But yes, I take on board all of that. But surely one aspect and one important context of this is what he said at the Knesset when he pointed out Miriam Adelson as a controller of U.S. policy. I mean, if that's not an anti-Semitic trope, I don't know what is. What did you make of it when you watched that? I don't know whether you were in the public gallery.
I wasn't. I watched it on television. He didn't say she was a controller.
He said she came into the White House whenever she wanted, saw the president whenever she wanted, and certainly her dead husband used to, and her loyalties were perhaps more to Israel than to the United States. You can imagine how that shocked.
No, first of all, he did.
Americans
no, he did not say That's not what he said. That's your interpretation. But he also said, he also, I remember when he was talking about Charlie Kirk, whom he loved, he said things like, you know, Charlie was this young guy and he'd call me up and say, you have to meet with me. You have to talk to this one and that one. And I would say to him, Charlie, I'm the president of the United States. You can't just tell me. He says that about people of whom he's fond. He didn't say that Miriam controls the White House. And it is true that she gives lots of money. And by the way, just so you should know, she is not on Netanyahu's side, as it happens politically, within internal Israeli politics. So yes, she gives a lot of money. So do rich people give a lot of money. And not everybody thanking. And when Trump gave that speech at the Knesset, it was a loving speech about and towards Israel.
Okay, well, I mean, the ceasefire, as it's being reported all around the world, is not a ceasefire. Hundreds of Palestinians, most of the men, women, and children have been killed. What do you think has been the net result of this two-year campaign? I know that Trump has written a letter begging for a pardon, your former boss to get off on corruption charges. But, I mean, why are... Now Israel is not producing the figures. Why did 125,000 Jews leave Israel between 2022 and 2024? And why is it an international pariah nation right around the world? And why, I'm speaking to you from the UAE. It says here, UAE probably won't join Gaza's stabilization force. Saudi Arabia has called it a genocide. What's going to happen to Israel now that Jews are, well, there's a mass exodus from Israel, of Jews.
Okay, so at the moment, the exodus, it almost equals the amount of Jews moving to Israel. But you're absolutely right. Many Israelis have left. And if, now, you mixed in a whole lot of things in here, so it's hard to... But if you want to talk about the exodus of Jews, I know these Jews. I know a lot of Israelis who have left. And I can tell you the main reason is the economy. Because Israel has a very, very strong macro economy. And a very crappy micro one.
Much of the money being poured into your country by the United States on killing Palestinians, presumably.
Why is the economy suffering?
Why you think the economy is suffering if it's not the result of the mass murder of Palestinians.
Because it never got over its socialist roots, okay? It's much more capitalist than it used to be, but it never got over. The government owns too much. The government owns the land. There's a lot, and there are monopolies, and there's very little competition. So supermarkets, they're in collusion with one another so that they keep prices high. That's why I'm talking about
the consumer economy. Do you think it's time now to wrap it up? I mean, I don't know whether you've ever seen this book, 51 Documents, Zionist Collaboration with the Nazis. So it wasn't only those socialist progressives that were going over there. It was also the Nazis that were closely related to the birth of Israel. And I mean, this is not some anti-Semitic trope. These are actual documents from the setting up of Israel. And I mean, this book is now becoming a bestseller in the United States as well. Is it time to wrap up the Israel project and have a one state?
No.
So that the Arabs whose land was stolen can get it back.
Absolutely not. And you know, you and I don't agree on this. And you're talking about all the Palestinians being killed. And I'm telling you that if they would stop trying to kill Israelis, and if October 7th hadn't happened, all we've been asking throughout the last 2 years, lay down your arms, release the hostages.
No, October 7th has nothing to do with Ron Dermer talking about depopulating the Palestinian population. We were talking to a British surgeon who was in Gaza who said that the IDF deliberately shot at the reproductive organs of young men so that they can't reproduce.
Oh my God, I'm sorry. Those blood libels they're as crazy as Tucker Carlson's.
He was just a professor. He was a consultant at the University of Oxford.
Really?
Gastrointestinal surgeon.
Don't spread...
He wasn't a Nazi.
Jews can spread blood libels as well. All right. Look, there's, you know, when we reach that point, there's no point of agreement on what is actually going on. But absolutely, I do not believe that it's time to close the Zionist project. Absolutely not. This is a wonderful country. Listen, just because I get annoyed at the cost of groceries, I'm telling you, this is a wonderful country. And I know I grew up in the United States. I moved to Israel when I was 19. I love it. I had my children here. I think it is wonderful.
You presumably don't live on occupied land, perhaps. But what are you going to do when Iran retaliates for the Israeli attacks on Iran? I mean, presumably, Iran can level Israel with its hypersonic missiles.
First of all, if the Iranian people don't overthrow the regime, because for one thing, they've run out of water. If the Iranian people do not overthrow the regime, the question is, does Iran have, Israel and the United States severely weakened Iran's ballistic missile and nuclear plant capabilities. If Iran actually does launch the surprise attack it says it's going to, Israel will have no choice. But to launch another operation, obviously.
To do what? I mean, what, launch your nuclear weapon?
To prevent Iran from going nuclear and doing what it vows to wipe Israel off the map. What do you mean? It's a sworn enemy. It is the head of the octopus. It is the one responsible for Hamas and the Houthis and the Iraqi militias and Hezbollah in Lebanon. What are you talking about?
But the whole world is now supporting the view that your country committed a genocide, which is the same view the Iranian government has.
No, not the whole world. That is true that it is being spread at the UN, et cetera. And there are, yes, scholars who support that and many who don't, many who are debunking it.
Do you think that letter from Trump to Netanyahu was trying to persuade Netanyahu and Smotrich, and it was actually to Herzog, wasn't it, the Trump letter officially? Do you think that letter was an attempt to prevent the cabinet deciding on a unilateral attack on Iran in the next few days, I don't know, before the midterms in the US?
No.
Why do you think Trump did that? Because presumably there are people in Trump's cabinet clearly who don't want the war in Iran to start again. And there are people in the Israeli cabinet who want that war to start again. Like you've just said there, the octopus.
Okay, so let me answer that. There's no connection between Trump's request and Iran or anything else. That there is no connection. I'll tell you what. When Trump addressed the Knesset, he also turned to Herzog and said to him, come on, why don't you give him a pardon? But you have to understand something. Netanyahu doesn't want a pardon because a pardon presupposes that there was guilt and now you're being pardoned for a crime. Netanyahu wanted to prove his innocence. And Trump has said that. Now, the reason I believe that Trump did this, it has nothing to do with Iran or anything like that. What he did, you know, Trump, the way he sprayed perfume on the Ashara in the White House, Trump identifies with Netanyahu being on trial because Trump felt that he was being pursued like a witch hunt against him using the legal system.
There certainly was. Okay. We're out of time, though, Ruthie. I hope you come back on again.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by the UK-USEU armed genocide in Palestine. We'll be back on Monday with a retired US Air Force colonel who will expose the relevance of NATO's Operation Gladio, which violently subverted Western European societies to make them the totalitarian countries they are today. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.